From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Do not repeat the story that I just told Marjorie.
It's outrageous.
It was off the record.
Off the record.
Here with us in
we'll
Studio 3.
We'll find a way to work it in for his future date.
For his monthly appearance as Boston Police Commissioner William Evans, we'll also use this opportunity, I'm sure he will, to officially thank Mother Nature for doing her part to keep crime down. I would assume, Commissioner Evans, it is great to see you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Is that true, by the way? Does horrible weather when you have cabin fever or you're locked in your house, does that reduce crime rates?
Well, so far we're off to a good start this year. I think, you know, before the weather hit, I think it came about January 26th, we were down about 29% crime. So we're off to a good start, but now we have a 37% reduction in crime from where we were last year. So I sort of
joke. 29 even without snow?
Without snow.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Commissioner.
But I sort of joke a little that, like, it's hard to break into a car if you can't see the car, Jim. So I sort of, you know what
That's
I mean?
An
so,
point.
So like some crime, obviously, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it helps us. But, you know, our officers are out there working hard. Like this weekend, you know, they got 4 great arrests, 4 guns off the street, a Mac 11, which is like a machine gun. The officers are still out there working real hard.
We have a lot of snow questions, but before we do, the 29% pre-blizzard, that's huge.
Yeah.
What's that attributable to?
Well, again, I think, you know, last year we were off to a rough start, if you remember. The violence really went up on me and Mayor Walsh right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, our homicide rate went up. But, you know, I think we've done a lot of good strategies over the last year, and I think it's really paying off that we're down violent crime 32% this year. And the good thing, Jim, honestly, is what types of crimes you normally see go up, which are domestics, believe it or not, because people are trapped in their homes.
Yes.
And they're fighting and this and that. Right. And you know, a lot of incidents on the street regarding the snow. And I don't see a lot of violence, knock on wood, whether or not that will continue. But overall, everyone seems to be weathered the storm pretty much, as I like to say, pretty well.
We should give the number to say that if you want to speak to the commissioner directly and ask him a question about anything that moves you, it's 877-301-8970. I'm sorry, Margaret.
Well, I do have a few snow questions, Commissioner. You know, every time I see a police officer out in the street, you know, directing traffic or whatever, when it's like, you know, 10 degrees below zero with the wind chill, I wonder if there are some tips that you could share with our readers. I mean, what do you guys and gals do? Do you have, like, the North Face Long Johns underneath or the L.L. Bean? Or, I mean, you
can't. Actually a great question.
Well, yeah, because you're out there for a long time.
Well, Marjorie, when it goes under 50, I wear my Long Johns no matter what, believe it or not. I'm sitting here with a log coat on. I don't have a whole lot of blood to me.
But,
you know, they're out there. You know, they're all bundled up. They wear, you know, whether it's Under Armour or whatnot, they come prepared because in our job, you never know when you're going to be out there. Same with me. You know, you can all of a sudden be out at a crime scene and be stuck there for hours on hours. And, you know, I think our officers have done a tremendous job. You know, I have the drug unit out there in uniform. I have the gang unit, the fugitive unit, domestic violence. So we put everybody in uniform and we just go at it to make sure we can get people out of the city the best we can. Obviously, when the expressways are all backed up, which they have been, and there's nowhere to go, the best we can do, if we can't work magic, all we can do is keep the box clear. And I think they've done a great job doing that.
Well, part of the problem is, obviously, that I assume is the reason you have all these police officers that normally do something else out there directing traffic, because no one can see around these huge snow drifts.
Yeah.
So, or piles of snow. So if the crime is down, which is great, aren't accidents up with all these people trying to peek out? You know, you peek out, but you're halfway across the road before you peeked around the corner of the drift.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, we've had 4 major storms and no one has anywhere to go. So we do have a problem. But honestly, I see Mike Dennehy and the Public Works doing a great job.
Yep.
They're still out there every night doing what they can do. But knock on wood, I mean, I know the other day, 2 days ago, I heard about a Quincy kid getting hit by a cab.
Yes.
We haven't had a lot of that in the city. You know, me and the mayor have been out there asking people to pay attention as they walk down the street, get the headphones off, sort of walk into the traffic as opposed to having your back to it. And knock on wood, we haven't had a whole lot of tragedies here around pedestrians getting hit or fatalities around motor vehicle accidents.
You know, we've heard the mayor respond to some criticism that some sidewalks are impassable by saying that's not the city's responsibility. All we can do is go to the business owner, the homeowner, and say you have a legal obligation to do this. Who enforces that? This is not police, is it, or is
no,
it?
No, the police don't do it. It's code enforcement for the city and inspectional services. So I think they've written over 2,000 violations to homeowners. I know even the city departments, I think we've written over 50 to our own properties. And the mayor's made it clear to the directors of those city agencies that he expects them to get that right out of their
pocket. Is towing also not part of your deal?
Who's no, we do the towing.
And is that my understanding? I read something the other day. I'm not sure where I read it, that towing was down, that Walsh's position was, actually in the Herald, Marty Walsh to ease towing during city cleanup. Yeah. I mean, what's the directive? What's the mandate?
Well, when we're out there, Jim, when the snow's first going on, we do, our officers are out there with the loudspeakers. I know transportation is. The last thing we want to do is tow anybody. So we usually, for about 4 hours, try to run people's plates. We announce over, so people voluntarily comply. But unfortunately, we have to tow if we have to clear that artery. There's nothing worse than riding up the street and you see it nice and clear, and then you see this car basically buried. So if the first couple storms, we had some real great compliance, and then people, I think, just got stuck and they had nowhere to go. The garages were full, and I think that's why the mayor has lessened up, because I think he realizes we've all reached our capacity. Mm. And so, it's a good move by him, but honestly, we don't like to ticket. We don't like to tow. But unfortunately, to clear the arteries, we have no other choice.
Now, Commissioner Evans, before we get to the calls, by the way, the number is 877-301-8897. I know you said crime is down, but parking, as we know, is at a premium around Boston. I'm quoting from Channel 7 News now, and says the premium is nowhere more relevant than in South Boston, where residents are going to criminal lengths to protect their parking spots.
Right.
And apparently there was somebody whose car was smashed, the three windows in a car were smashed, and then over in the South End where they've tried to eliminate the Space Saver deal, some kid came out and his tires were slashed.
Right.
But, I know we'll talk about Space Savers in a second, but I can kind of get it in some ways where you'd be really ticked off with all this snow. If you spent like 3 hours or 4 hours shoveling out your car, and then somebody decided to have their girlfriend stay overnight and took your space.
Right. I mean, it's an unwritten law over there. And knock on wood, I've watched it over the years. I live over there. It's no worse this year than it was in the past. In fact, it seemed to be less of a problem that I read, because I look across the city every day. I read the reports. But, if someone shovels it out and the mayor's made clean, they own it. But I don't tolerate anybody doing vandalism. It's a real low blow, slicing someone's tires or whack, please. I mean, leave a note on their door, maybe with your phone number, and if they come out, let you know. But I think it's petty, It's sort of face up to it, go ring the person's bell. But, vandalizing someone's car and cost them $1,000 doesn't do anyone good. So I'm clearly not for the policy of if you park in someone's space, you deserve it. Nobody deserves that.
Okay. Despite that, Commissioner, in the spirit of full disclosure, you were kind enough a month or so ago and you were here to tell us about your own personal behavior. And then we're going to first play what the commissioner said a month or so ago. And then what I assume you wanted us to do is we played it for the mayor when the mayor was here. So here is both Commissioner Evans and then the mayor of the city of Boston about what Commissioner Evans does early in the morning. Here it is.
I got to tell you a secret. When I'm out jogging at 4:45 in the morning, I'm throwing a lot of Space Savers out of there, and I'm always afraid I'm going to get caught. But, when it's not even snowing, people have out Space Savers. And after 5 days of snow, they still have them out.
I guess I have to tell him when he's telling you a secret to make sure the radio's off.
Exactly.
No, but I think what he's referring to, and he's right, before the snowstorm, people put Space Savers out there, and there's no need to put a Space Saver out there before a snowstorm. And I think he could be alluding to the other thing as well, but, if there's a forecast of snow is coming, people start putting out cones and chairs and everything else. There's no need for that. You wait till after the snow, depending on the size of the storm.
You still doing it or no?
No, I'm not doing it. Because you ratted me out, so now I'm on the straight and narrow.
877-301-8970. That, of course, is the voice of the Commissioner of the Boston Police, who joins us once a month and joins you. So let's take some calls. Elliot, you're in Boston. You're on with Commissioner Evans. Thanks so much for the call. Elliot. Is this not working, gentlemen and ladies? Let's put Elliot on hold. Mary, you're in East Boston. You're on with Commissioner Evans.
Good afternoon. Last night I had the scanner on, and I just want to commend the police department. It was a very cold night, and I listened to a response that was on Bayburn and the All Channels that a little 7-year-old boy was missing in that weather. And it was amazing, Commissioner, to hear your troops, effectively. I got this. I'm over here. They checked, and in less than an hour, he was found. Mm-hmm. And I think that people forget that that's the kind of thing the police do, too. And they held our family one time when our uncle with dementia went missing. And there's more to policing than just what we see in the news and the bad publicity that you guys get. But I just wanted to tell you, last night was amazing.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I received the page on the 7-year-old missing and, you know, stuff like that. Unfortunately, we get way too often, especially with the elderly also. You know, we work currently with elderly to get sort of GPS bracelets on a lot of them. And a lot of our officers are trained up. So if an elderly person goes missing, they walk away from a nursing home or they walk away from a hospital. You know, the program's called the Not Star program, and I encourage more people to look into it. If you have a young child who might like to run away, who has some mental issues, or elderly, because we have the technology where our officers will ride around in their vehicles, and they'll get basically a low jack hit through Not Star, and we're able to do it. But, you know, a young child missing is everyone's worst nightmare, so we'll bring officers from across the city to locate a kid, especially on a cold night where minutes matter with a young child wandering the streets.
Was the child outside?
Yes.
He was outside for an hour.
Yeah.
Was he in winter coat and hat?
Yeah, he was.
He was.
And eventually the officers, you know, through contacts and whatnot, were able to locate where he was. A lot of times they're out and then they'll go over to a buddy's house or an aunt's house. And most of the time the kids, knock on wood, turn up. But on a night like last night, it was very important that we brought out as many officers as we did to find the young child.
So had the child been outside for a full hour?
Well, I think he was in and out of people's houses, but eventually located.
Okay. Hey, Mary, we're really glad you called because we don't tell those kind of stories nearly often enough. 877-301-8970. I was going to mention this later, but since she was complimenting the performance of some of your men and women, a story I read the other day about where one or more of your officers were fired on. And they showed restraint that I can't even imagine. I'd love you to describe the training and what goes into this, where the officers didn't fire back. I mean, you know the incidents. Describe it if you can. And then how do you train young officers in terms of how to handle those kinds of situations?
Well, that particular incident was on Center Street in Jamaica Plain about 10 days ago. You know, I ended up responding, and it was a case of some young kids being on a sort of a pre-release program with an organization that gets kids to work. And
is this ROCA?
ROCA.
Yeah, we had some people from ROCA
a
couple of months ago.
And one of the kids was in a nice neighborhood where those type of incidents don't normally happen, got shot dead there. And my officer was on the street working on a tour, and he heard the shot. He got out of his vehicle. The suspect ran by him. And the suspect turned around and started firing his gun. Now, clearly within our rules and regulations, when we're the threat of deadly force, we have every right to do it. But this old officer chose not to do it, probably because of safety of other people in the area. And, you know, he gave chase. And with fellow officers, they got him behind a house, and he had a shovel in his hand trying to pretend that that's all he was doing. But our officers receive extensive training, Jim, in the academy on de-escalation and bringing it down in situations that we don't shoot if we don't have to. And I've been on the show before, and I said, you know, it's the worst thing we can possibly do. Last year, we took 1,061 guns off the street. In any of those incidents, we never fired our gun. I think so far this year, we've had about 5 or 6 situations where people have come at us with knives, and no one's ever fired their gun. This morning, I heard a call on my way into work where a young lady wouldn't put down a knife on our officers. And, you know, through their training and able to bring the situation down through de-escalation tactics, we're not seeing a lot of use of force. And I think that's the untold story, because what's happening across the country, we are getting labeled with. And I think I got a well-trained force that's very reluctant. And sometimes you worry how reluctant they are, that they'll put themselves in danger. But I got to commend our officers for the amount of force they use it day in and day out, for the amount of guns they're taking off the street.
That's the voice of Commissioner William Evans. Should we go back to the calls, Marjorie?
Yes, let's go to Mel in Rosendale. Hi, Mel.
Hello, Mel.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes,
Mel.
We can.
Okay. Yes, hi, Commissioner. This is Carlos Arredondo's wife, Mel.
Oh, hello, hi. Mel. How are you?
Okay. I'm calling, Commissioner, because, of course, the marathon is around the corner. But even before that, I'm wondering how the police are going to be preparing. They're saying that the trial for Tsarnaev is going to be starting either next Monday or the following. And also, I wanted to know if you're running in the marathon and how things are preparing for the marathon this year. And thank you for all you do. You're such a great guy, and we really appreciate you and your family.
Well, thank you. My wife's a Rosie girl, so it's always good to hear from a Rosendale girl. So she always has Rosie rules. You know, when I tell her she upgraded when she came to Southie, she gets upset. But, you know, we're getting ready for the marathon. You know, we had a great plan last year. Obviously, with the trial going on, you know, we'll sort of raise our level of concern. But we had a great plan last year. We'll probably implement the same plan this year and obviously work with the FBI, all our partners, to make sure there's no security threat to the marathon. It's a great day. It's probably one of the best days in the city. And tough year to train, though. You know, I see a lot of runners out there. I see them in the street. You know, it seems when most training clubs do their runs on Saturdays and Sundays, we've had the worst weather. You know, I've been out there. I'm out early, you know, usually 4:45. So I usually run in the middle of the street when there's no traffic. Like this morning, I was out there at 4:45. And, you know, but honestly, I'm not going to run it this year. I went down to Disney about 6 weeks ago. I ran the Disney Marathon. I'm signed up to do West Haven Marathon. I think it's March 22nd. So I'm going to get my marathons in around Boston. But, you know, I look forward to working that day, making sure the day goes off right, and walking up and down the street with my officers on that day to make sure the event goes off well.
Mel, thank you for the call. Say hi to Carlos. Mel raised an issue which I hadn't thought about. Is what do you do? What special preparation will you do or would you do once the trial has started in terms of jury selection, but once testimony actually starts in the Tsarnaev case at the federal courthouse in South Boston, anything special or just business as usual?
Well, we have a lot of officers assigned down there daily.
Anyway.
June, every day.
Because of the Tsarnaev trial?
Because of that. We work with the U.S. Marshals down there. We work with the state police just to make sure that whole area is secure, you know, as far as people and coming and going, the jurors coming and going. So we've really stepped up our presence both on land and in the water. So that's really self-contained, Jim. That being said, obviously we've heightened our watch on intelligence just to see who's traveling in and out of Boston.
Are there any credible threats that are related to the trial that you're aware of?
Not at this time, not that I'm aware of.
We had an email from Ryan who's upset about videotaping. I'll read it to you. He says, I attended a few of the Black Lives Matter protests in Boston earlier this winter. At each, I saw uniformed BPD officers with video cameras recording peaceful protesters. What does the BPD do with this videotape? Who's it shared with? How long is it kept? What oversight is in place? BPD was caught violating their own records and policies in 2010 by holding on to surveillance records of peaceful activists for longer than the rules allow. So he says he's concerned about the video being used for similar purposes this time.
Well, again, you know, to be transparent for us, that's what we do. Because there's always allegations in these protests that police overreacted. We're getting videoed constantly by people with their phones.
Yep.
We have every right to videotape, to countermand those charges that we overreacted. So, you know, it's an interesting dilemma when people like the ACLU are calling for body cameras, yet they will not let the police. What's the difference between us having a body camera or us have a camera on our shoulder filming people? It's all about being transparent and, you know, making sure that there's no credible allegations against us. So it not only protects us against allegations, but also if there's an incident of vandalism or an assault on our officer, like you've seen at some of these events, whether it's UMass Amherst or whatnot, we can go back and look at those films and hold someone accountable if they damage someone's car or whatnot. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You really can't. If you guys can be up in our face, video camming, showing incidents that you think we overreact, we should be allowed to film it to just show our side of the story. So, you know, you can't tie our hands completely.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a different situation when the authority figure in a relationship, the police officer, I know if a police officer is videotaping me, I'd find it to be a pretty intimidating experience. The flip side is that there is, while there's a right for the officer to do that, there's also, as you know, a constitutional right on the part of the citizen to to videotape what you're doing. So don't you think there's a power imbalance, which does make a difference in your case, Commissioner?
But I think it's more, Jim, just so to be transparent. So we'll get all kinds of allegations after something like this that we used excessive force. And even this one in particular where we were getting pushed, we were getting shoved, mm-hmm. we were basically being, you know, almost brutalized as far as the terminology be thrown out. It's nice to have that on videotape when people make complaints. So it's not like we're videoing someone, you know, secretly meeting Jim. These are out here in major protests where everybody has a right to be heard, and we're not interfering with people's First Amendment rights to protest. But at the same time, we have to be transparent, and by filming people's movements, it gives us a lot more credibility to put down these allegations that come up. And it just troubles me that everyone wants body cameras, yet they don't want us filming.
Were you in the body cameras? We've spoken to you about a couple of months. Are you closer to buying in?
No, I'm really not a big supporter because I've said before, it's only a gadget that people put on police officers think that's going to solve our relationship with minorities. To me, it's about getting into the community, building a rapport with them, building respect, building relationships. That's the only way the relationship is going to change between police and the minority, not because we put a camera on people's lapel, which only will stifle the amount of rapport between the minority community and police. So, you know, I know there's some good points on it, but I think it's going to inhibit the relationship between community and police.
You know, before we get back to the calls, Commissioner, I just wonder if you hear a lot now, a lot more from your officers about people videotaping them with their cameras. This is a common thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's been going. Occupy Boston.
Yeah.
I was down there for 70 days, and they had those cameras right up in our face, almost taunting us. So it's a tactic that's been used.
Okay.
I know we've had some instances where the officers have got frustrated and taken it away, and we try to tell them, no, that's the public's right. We have to take that. You know, they're up in our face. They're sort of taunting us, but we've learned to be restrained. So I don't see the issue if we are off at a distance filming when we get subjected to everybody having video on us. It's a way for us to sort of disprove a lot of the allegations that come out.
Okay, Police Commissioner Bill Evans is with us for another 15 minutes at least, so hang on the phones. We're going to take a quick break. You can also email him at bpr@wgbh.org. Commissioner Bill Evans, the conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Joining us, as he does once a month, is the Commissioner of Police in Boston, William Evans, taking our questions and yours. You can call him at 877-301-8970. You can email him at bprwgbh.org. You can tweet him at BOS Public Radio. And beyond that, I have no other options. Marjorie.
Joining us on the phone is State Representative Jeffrey Sanchez from Jamaica Plain. Hi, State Representative.
Hey, Representative. How are you?
Good, thank you. Hey, Jim. Hi, Marjorie. How are you?
Fine. Great, thanks for calling.
Hi, Jeff.
Good to hear you. Hey, I just wanted to get on the phone just because, you know, this commissioner, he doesn't get lauded very much, you know, because he's out at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, seeing ungodly things every single day. And given everything that's happening around the country and, I don't know, my own experiences growing up here in Boston in the 80s, you know, I'm a child of the Stewart murder. I'm also someone who saw what happened in Eggleston Square. Back in the 80s when there was a gang member that was murdered and how high the tensions were during that time. And the commissioner, and even now in Jamaica Plain, we've had a few incidences that have kept the commissioner and our captain busy in the community. And when I call him, when those things happen, the first thing he says is, "Who do we need to talk to? Who do we need to talk to?" And I appreciate you always doing that because it's tough and the emotions are really high. But you've always done it in a way that's been really upstanding, and I appreciate it because there's still so much going on. And like I said, you know, I'm always calling you and bugging you, but I do appreciate what you do.
No, and Jeff, you don't call and bug me at all. It's nice to hear from you, and I always say I wish more people would care as much as you do about what's going on in the neighborhood. You know, about 5 weeks ago, we had 6 kids shot in Bromley Heath at a community center. Thank God none of them fatally, but, you know, it's nice to hear that right away you're calling me to say, what's going on? What can we do together? And you pull the community together. And, you know, unfortunately, I think sometimes we get, too complacent about young African-American anyone getting shot in the city. So it's nice to see the outrage and you continually holding my feet to the fire and asking what we can do. So I wish we had more of that, and I think the city would be a safer place. So thanks, Jeff, for your nice words.
Representative Sanchez, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 877-301-8970. We've taken a little bit of heat on another front, Commissioner. There is one captain on the Boston Police who the Globe reports made $416,000 last year. There's 7 other members of the police force, not including you, who made more than $300,000 last year. Your quote in the Globe was, "There are unforeseen events that make us spend what we spend. We try to be as frugal as we can be. The average cop out there, they get paid well, but they have a dangerous job. They earn every penny." When the public says, what does a mayor make? How much money do you make?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah, what do you make?
Well, I think last year I made 185.
Now, you make 185. You're the boss.
Right.
The mayor, what does he make, 175 or something?
Yeah.
How is it okay for an individual cop, even if he's a totally honorable person, to make 2.5 times as much as you do, 2.5 times as much as the mayor? You don't have a problem with that at all?
Right. Well, what happened in this year's salaries, Jim, and if you look at it, and the article pointed out, is there was a retroactive check, which was pretty large for a lot of the captains and the lieutenants. There was also a comp time buyout, which for that particular captain, I think was like $130,000.
Yeah, I think that's
so
right.
So that made up a vast amount of what a lot of these high salaries were. They were actually paybacks. And, you know, Jim, I think earlier you mentioned about the officer getting shot at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I think we do yeoman's work out there every day. And when I hear that the Red Sox just signed someone for $30 million, 19 years old, I think we're more valuable to society than someone throwing a ball or whatnot. So I think we got our priorities. I think firemen, EMS, social workers that are out there day in and day dealing with the evils of society and some of the tough stuff, you know, I think they deserve every penny they get, honestly. And, you know, the salaries are high, but no one gives it to them. A lot of those working Super Bowl night, also being out there New Year's Eve, July 4th, being out there in the cold, like Marjorie said, when everyone's home snug in their feety pajamas, basically, and our officers are out there battling the elements, people appreciate us. But unfortunately, you know, the cost of professional, excellent policing, I stand behind my guys 100%. I really do. They earn every penny.
877-301-8970. It's the voice of the Commissioner of Police in Boston, who's from South Boston, as is Rosemary. You're on with the Commissioner. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, Commissioner Evans. I'm wondering if you have any strong feelings about the St. Patrick's Day Parade not being here this year, and do you have any information that that might be the case, that they might have to move it to downtown?
Well, again, being a native South Boston, I think I'll get killed by my local politicians if I really take a stance. But I've had conversations with the mayor about this year, about the whole idea of looking at possibly a new route for it.
Because of the snow.
Because of the snow. I mean, Broadway is great. Down Broadway, I think that's pretty wide. But if you go down to P Street where the parade turns, it's tough because of all the cars still embedded. Some people haven't even shoveled out. It goes down a lot of side streets, some winding roads. So, you know, we're only 2.5 weeks away. The parade's on March 15th. So, you know, ideally, you know, I think running it down Boylston Street's an option, but I don't think the South Boston community will want to lose that parade. I think it's a big part of the culture, but I think this year, me and the mayor have had conversations and, you know, about the possibility of coming up with a new route, because I think some of the streets, we can't be worrying about a parade route when, you know, we got a lot more other more important routes to dig out of, to tell you the truth. So we're having conversations, but not about moving it out, not yet anyway.
Who makes the final call, you or the mayor?
Well, the mayor. The mayor's my boss. He tells me whatever he does, it sounds good.
Rosemary, thanks for the call. It sounds to me like, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that you actually may have made a decision, but there's some anxiety about publicly.
No decision.
So it's still possible it could be in South Boston.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's going to be in South Boston.
Oh, it does.
Again, but we just talked about some alternatives, whether, you know, do we run it? It's going to be hard to run it down some of these side streets with two weeks to go, Jim. But ultimately, that's his call. I think he'll have to talk to the electeds and the community leaders, and we'll all come up with a good solution. But taking it out of the city, I don't think is something out of South Boston, something we discussed at this time.
You know what's amazing?
You know what's really
depressing
about what the commissioner just said? Yeah. That he's operating under the assumption that we could still have all this snow.
Of course we will.
In 2.5 weeks, yeah, really depressing.
Think about these conversations. St. Patrick's Day breakfast and parade a couple of weeks. The marathon is Mel called, just a couple of weeks after
that. We need a few 40-degree days here. The number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. I know there's not going to be one this week.
No.
Because it's going to be like below zero again. But geez,
it's going to snow tonight. What are you talking about?
2 to 4 inches.
Yeah, that's great.
Tonight.
Thank you.
Do you have ice dams? Everybody we speak to has ice dams. Tell us you have ice dams.
No, well, you know, I had a guy go up a roof.
Oh, not a cop.
No, not a cop.
Okay, I want to be clear. Okay.
The place. Okay, don't give me a trouble.
I'm just asking.
Okay, James from Hudson is on the phone. Hi, James from Hudson.
Hi, Marjorie. How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Very good to be able to get on the show. I've listened quite a bit to you and Jim, and I just wanted to weigh in on sort of the relationship between police officers and, I guess, the public at large or minorities.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a little touchy-feely on you here. So I kind of feel as though, personally, every decision that anybody makes is based on either love or fear. There's a spectrum, and sort of every decision we make comes from one of those two places, and I kind of think about that when I think about how, I guess as a society, we want to address this relationship. So things like the lapel cameras, I feel like it comes from a place of fear in that case, where you're looking at it and saying, okay, we have this problem, how can we address this in almost an armor and sword kind of way? And it's like the commissioner said, I feel like that sort of approach is just going to maybe make things worse, whereas the other perspective, maybe coming at it from a place of love, is saying, okay, well, how can we build this relationship and build this trust? And I think about myself, I used to be kind of, when I was a bit younger, very, against the police and the idea that the police were out to get you. But over the years, I've come to learn that, you know, that's not always the case. And when you come to, you know, meet individuals and get to know them, then it sort of dispels that fear or that bias. And I feel as though it could be the same way in this situation, in terms of the police approaching the minorities and the people. Maybe if there was some way for them to get to know each other more personally, some kind of police open house or I don't know. You know,
well, James,
I mean?
let's hold you there because the commissioner's actually spoken about this a lot in the past. But for new listeners, respond to what James had to say, if you will, Commissioner.
We tried at doing exactly what Jim says. You know, we have youth police dialogues where we're in the schools talking to the kids. This year, our academy class, we have a class in right now. We're going to bring in youth to talk to the kids about what the issues they're seeing police and confronting them. You know, we do Shop with a Cop, where we bring 300. In December every year at Target, we bring about 300 kids in, and we have about 400 cops who go into their pocket and buy these young kids a lot of them don't have a prayer. They don't have anyone coming. They don't have a Santa Claus. We take them around the store, and we buy them 4 or 5 gifts. And that's the type of stuff we do day in and day out. We hold dinners. We take the elderly out on boat trips in the summertime. No one else is doing what we do. And, you know, the whole reason for doing that is to build a lot of trust, respect, and ultimately make the neighborhood a lot safer and a better place to live.
Well, you know, that's just what the head of the FBI just said in that speech a few days ago, talking about how police officers across the country should be doing more of that kind of thing, so they'll understand and get to know the people that they may be policing in high crime areas. You know, I hate to ruin the mood here, but I'm getting a lot of emails from people saying that I fell down on the job on the question about the cameras back and forth, saying the question was not about so much about the cameras, but what do the police do with the videos after the fact? Do they delete them if nothing happened, or are they archiving them and scanning them for face recognition? What happens to these videos?
We just hold them. We probably get rid of them. I'm not sure what the policy, but I'm sure probably after 30 days or something. This isn't some covert operation here. It's basically, if we get allegations within the next week or two about a misconduct, we're able to bring them up and say that. There's no facial recognition. There's nothing sinister going on with this. This is basically, we do it all our demonstrations now just to make sure everything goes off safely and peacefully for the most part. We did it during Occupy 2 years ago, so this isn't a new tactic.
Yep.
It's just being out there and videotaping the events of the day.
So if a finite period of time passes and there are no complaints filed against your officers, they're erased, period.
You know, remember the guy down at Occupy, I just thought of this, that was selling the seaweed for like $3 packets. Do you remember him? I was down there covering Occupy with the Herald. Did you buy any of that seaweed while you were down there, Commissioner?
No, I didn't. No. Really, and that's why I'm in the position, thank God. Who knows what was in that seaweed?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Let's go to Richard in Southboro. You're on with Boston Public Radio with the Commissioner of the Boston Police Department. That'd be William Evans. Hey there, Richard.
Hi. Pleasure to meet you.
My
only comment to the Commissioner is he mentioned earlier about the public versus the police. Can't have it both ways. And my point is, when we're talking about the salaries, if we're willing as the taxpayers to pay top dollar for a public service, then I think that public service is going to be more highly scrutinized. And if mistakes are made, as in the case of Mr. Brown in wherever, and then the New York incident, then these things are going to be held more closer to the hip and more highly scrutinized. And so what usually has happened in the past is that the officers say, well, our job is it's a very high-risk situation. We want to go home at night. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't go home at night if you're there to protect the public. Protect the public should be first, especially if it's a highly paid.
I have to say, I'm missing your point here, Richard. I don't know if the commissioner is. What do you mean they
can't go home
at night? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, the thing is I used to be married to a cop, so I know very much that they're trained to be safe and to go. They used to say our job is to go home at night.
Yeah.
In other words,
alive and well. Yeah. So what are you taking the commissioner to task over? We're just not clear.
That if it's a highly paid job, that shouldn't be their job. Their job is to protect the public first, and then go home at night. And if mistakes are made, then it's going to be more highly scrutinized.
Who's I don't think anybody's quarreling with that, Richard.
I'm sorry, Richard. I don't get it either. Do you get what he's saying?
No, but no. I think he's trying to say, basically, I don't know if he's getting at the body cameras and that's being highly scrutinized like that. But, you know, obviously, you know, I think, you know, our officers do a great job. And, again, I stand behind them in what they get. They risk their lives every day out there in some tough elements, believe it or not. This weekend, you know, a machine gun off the street, an arrest on, you know, Nealon Street. We got an arrest on Center Street, Monadnock. We got a kid last week breaking into Newberry Street shops, had 130 prior arrests on his record. And, you know, we're out there in the snow catching people breaking into business.
He had 130 prior arrests?
Yeah.
Did he have any convictions?
Oh, yeah, he did. He had 8 open cases.
Has he served any jail time?
He's done jail time in the past, but what we find is with when people who are serial B&E guys, as soon as they come out, they just go right back to it. Most of them are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. It's not a young guy's crime.
Yeah.
It's their career criminal.
So just a quick aside, how long would you do if you were a serial B&E guy?
You might do 18 months, and then you come right back out.
Well, I guess maybe
property crime.
See it as the cost of doing business.
I assume
that it is.
Hey,
it
Commissioner, is. Before you go today, every month you're here, we ask you for an update on what your relationship or discussions have been with the feds, if any, vis-a-vis this Olympics bid.
There's
been a lot of press about how they're, if whatever security costs there are, the expectation is the feds pick it up. That is not part of your bailiwick, I guess. But have there been discussions with the feds preliminarily about what this means if Boston gets this or not yet?
Not at this stage, Jim. You know, I talk to the FBI almost weekly on events regarding terrorism and whatnot. But, you know, the whole, you know, concept of the Olympics as far as payment and the scenario of it, whether it's going to be a national security event, we really haven't had those discussions yet. So I really can't dig too deep into that. It's still preliminary.
It's preliminary. It looks a little half-baked by the papers today, too, is what I've been reading.
You don't mean the security. You mean, so before you go, just for clarification, because the mayor will be here on Friday, this is a yes or no question. Are you or are you not at 5 a.m. in the morning removing space savers as you go on your morning routes? Yes or no question,
no,
Commissioner?
No, not with this snow.
Not with this snow.
They
so the answer
it.
Is...
Because people dig out now deserve it before when it's before it's snowing and people putting them in there. That's what I had an issue with.
We'll play it for the mayor.
Okay.
Commissioner,
really
it's great to see you.
I really
Thank
hope
so much.
That you are a bad meteorologist because I don't want the snow to still be here on March 15th. I'll have to shoot myself. Forget I shouldn't have said that with a police officer over there, but I can't take it anymore. Boston Police Commissioner William Evans, thank you very much for being here. He joins us every month, and we're love to talk to him. Coming up, our food writer, Corby Kummer, joins us to talk about the invasion of green crabs, the rehabilitated egg, and a self-control assist in the kitchen. Stay tuned for that conversation on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.